Okay, it is 12:33, so we're going to get started. If people chime in, that will be great. But for now, what I want to do today is give a brief introduction to both the book Mesilat Yesharim as well as the author, the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, both of which are really interesting, both of which make studying this text particularly fun. And to some extent, I feel like most people, when they're first introduced to Mesilat Yesharim, they're introduced while they're in yeshiva. Often when people go to Israel for that first year, it's one of the first books that one of the mashkiachs or one of the Chavrei Kolel, one of the guys who's in the Beit Midrash will suggest that if you want to start a book, they will lead you to the book Mesilat Yesharim. And very often when you study the Mesilat Yesharim the first time, you actually do not know any of the background of the book. You don't know any of the background of the Ramchal. And I think it's really unfortunate because both of those two facts make the reality of the Mesilat Yesharim being such a ubiquitous text in the Jewish community today all the more amazing, in my opinion. So just to understand the background and the backdrop, the Ramchal was born in the very beginning of the 18th century. I think it was, 1707, something like that. I don't remember the exact year, but very early. And he's born in Italy. Isaiah Bassan is a great rabbi and Talmudist in the area who is one of the Ramchal's main teachers. And the Ramchal is really an unbelievable author. He writes plays. He writes books. His passion, though, is Kabbalah. His passion is the mystical texts. Now, when we learn Mesilat Yesharim, you're not going to have any mystical overtones. There might be some mystical undertones, but you're not going to get any overt mysticism. And it's one of the reasons I think that the Mesilat Yesharim was insulated from some of the realities of the Ramchal's life. So let me get into that. Before we can really talk about the Ramchal, though, we have to appreciate the backdrop in which he is working. Right? In the mid-17th century, 1660s, Rav Shabtai Tzvi, the famous false messiah, was really coming to popularity. His name was floated across the Jewish world. Really, honestly, everybody saw him as the potential messianic figure. And Shabtai Tzvi was a young, charismatic Kabbalist who had followers and people who saw him as their leader. And what ended up transpiring was, over time, his fame got ahead of him, and some of the Islamic leadership heard about this, and if you're a competing religion, having the Jewish Messiah come is not good for business. And so they kidnapped Shabtai Tzvi and forced him to convert to Islam. Shabtai Tzvi chooses to convert to Islam, and many of his followers are disillusioned at that moment, but there is a small population known as the Donme who actually continue to follow Shabtai Tzvi and convert to Islam. So Shabtai Tzvi created waves in the Jewish community. Because what happened was, in the aftermath of Shabtai Tzvi, all these Jews who had been in exile and felt really bad about themselves all of a sudden had a backbone, and they thought Mashiach was there, and then it was all just, the rug was pulled out from under them. They thought they had it, and then, right, their hopes were dashed. And so you had this really terrible, dramatic reality flooding the Jewish community, and the Jewish leadership felt they needed to take action. They couldn't let this happen again. And there basically are these rabbis who become, we can call them witch hunters, but they're basically Sabbatian hunters. And they're trying to find any and all rabbis, leaders, lay people who have any connection to Shabtai Tzvi and to defrock them, to put it out in the open, and to marginalize them from the greater Jewish community because they viewed them as so dangerous as Shabtai Tzvi had been himself. Because of that, certain restrictions on the study of Kabbalah became the norm, right? We all today know this number, 40 years old, you shouldn't start learning Kabbalah until you're 40. That really doesn't become a thing until Shabtai Tzvi. After Shabtai Tzvi, people are afraid of what Kabbalah learning early on in your career could do. The problem is that for many years before that, it was very normal for people to engage in mystical learning at an early age. And the Ramchal is one of those people who is naturally gravitates towards mystical learning. And at a young age, he already claims to have some sort of mystical chavrusa with an angel, with a magid. He has a journal that he keeps. And this is stuff that, I don't know, it's above my pay grade. I don't really know how this works. But tragically, the Ramchal dies at age 39. So if he had been restricted from learning Kabbalah till age 40, he never would have touched any Kabbalistic literature. Instead, the Ramchal chooses to do so under the radar until one of his students starts sending letters out about his Rebbe, and this certain Yikutiel, is the way he's quoted in the various letters, sends out these letters across the Jewish community about how amazing this young Kabbalist leader, charismatic leader is, and that starts to create problems for the Ramchal. Rabbis see this as a red flag, or multiple red flags, and a lot of them start ganging up, reaching out to the likes of Isaiah Bassan and some of the other friends of the Italian Jewish community, trying to make sure that they pump the brakes on the Ramchal's career. This is the environment that the Ramchal is working in. And because of this, in his lifetime, he was quite controversial, A, and he was not really very popular, B. He just wasn't such a massive figure at that period of time in his life because of all of this that he had to deal with. Now, enter the Mesilat Yesharim as a book, as a text. When you think about it, today, the concept of learning Musar, of learning basically texts that help you with your own self-advancement in terms of your midot and your personal development, you'll find it's hard to find people who will be against it. Right? Most people are going to encourage it. I mean, the self-help book in the secular community is probably one of the best-selling books that still exists to this day. And the concept of Musar, right, doesn't really start until the 19th century, maybe late 18th century. But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is really who's known as the father of the Musar movement. And if you want to trace back to the Hasidic movement, because the Hasidic movement also spends a lot of time dealing with the development of the person and the connection, the dveikut between individual and God, the Hasidic community and the Hasidic genre does not start either until the Baal Shem Tov. So the Baal Shem Tov is maybe slightly earlier, maybe. We're not exactly sure when the Baal Shem Tov lived, but certainly the generations of Hasidut, where you have multiple followers and lots of writings, really has not started yet. It won't start till the late 1700s. Right? And again, the Ramchal is born 1707, and he lives for only 39 years, so he never sees the Hasidic movement come to fruition. So both of these two movements, who spend a lot of time working on character development, they both draw tremendously from works like the Mesilat Yesharim that predate them. Now, I'm not saying the Mesilat Yesharim is the first book on, right, self-help. We have Rishonim, right, like Rabbeinu Yonah, the cousin of the Ramban, working in Gerona. So he wrote Hishari Tshuva and other works like that, where you have people certainly talking about the perfection of your character. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim deals with this. Another Rishon. These are hundreds of years, 500, 600 years before the Ramchal is at work. Nevertheless, there's a long break from the Rishonim until the Musar movement. And many historians see the work of Mesilat Yesharim as a forerunner, as a beginner, as a book that helps the development and the eventual acceptance of the learning of Musar as a form of learning. Now, it's important to think about what existed before Musar, before books that were dealing specifically with self-help. how was one supposed to learn these realities? Where were we supposed to get that from? So I would argue that there were two sources. The first is biblical stories, right? The stories of the Avot, many of the stories in the Bible itself, were meant to be the place where we got our dugma ishit, our personal role models that we would use to learn proper behavior. Secondly, mimetic learning, learning from your parents, learning from people in your community, learning from people around you, was the way that most people would learn how to be a mensch. And I think that it's important to note as we start learning any Musar text that in an ideal world, I think that those ways are probably still the most natural ways that we learn how to be the best people. Because when you take a text and try to develop yourself, it becomes very hard to translate that into real livable life. And that's going to be one of my major, I would say, questions that I have whenever I read a text like the Misilat Yesharim, is how does it translate into real livable life? And it's a question that I want you all to struggle with and try and think through, well, is that really going to work in my life? When you have someone living a life that you think is worth emulating, it's much easier to translate that from one person to another person, a lived life, a lived experience. And you can see some of the ramifications of how living such a life actually works. And so it's my one caveat. Whenever you study a Musar text, you have to appreciate the challenge of going from a written text to an actual lived life. And the more and the better that we can find role models in our own lives and role models from the Bible and beyond that can help us, guide us, be the best selves, is probably the best way for us to move our own personal growth. With all of that being said, though, it is important to have a baseline and to have a place to try to think about where and what we're working on in our lives. The growth mindset, the concept of just thinking about and actively working on how we can be better people and better Jews is really a very valuable exercise. And so even if there will be places and moments in the Misilat Yesharim and any Musar Sefer that you learn that doesn't seem to really jive with your own perspective in life, so take it with a grain of salt. But the fact is, the fact that you've tuned in to try to think about how to better be a person or a Jew, I think is valuable in and of itself. I think we have enough time that we'll start the very beginning of the Ramchal's introduction. I made this note earlier for anybody who wants to follow along in the text itself, which might be helpful for many. The place to do so is Sefaria. So if you go to Sefaria and you type in Misilat Yesharim, M-E-S-S-I-L-A-T space Yesharim, Y-E-S-H-A-R-I-M, then you will find basically the entire text of Misilat Yesharim in both Hebrew and English. And if you click, you could actually go to it by chapter. And if you click on the introduction, so not chapter one, but the introduction, you'll find the Ramchal himself introduces the book of Misilat Yesharim in the following way. I'm going to give you about a minute to find it, and then we'll jump right in. If anyone has any problems, you can unmute yourself and ask, and I can try and guide you. Okay, it seems like no one's having any trouble, so we'll jump right in. If you need to stop me, just unmute yourself and chime in. Also, if anyone has any questions at any point about something that I've said or say, always feel free to unmute yourself and chime in, and we'll discuss it. Says the Ramchal, Amar HaMechaber. So, one more word of introduction before we actually start. I forgot one more important piece of information. For many, many years, it was known that there was a manuscript of the Ramchal's Misilat Yesharim. They knew that already in the 18th century, but for many, many years, this manuscript was stuck in a Russian library, and not until 1991 was it made available for the public. And in the manuscript, the Ramchal actually has the whole text of the Mesilat Yesharim slightly different. It's in the manuscript form, it's actually a conversation between the Chacham and the Chassid, right? A more similar to kind of the Kuzari style of a conversation between two different figures. And this actually is, it's actually a theme that the Ramchal, you'll find many of the works, even the, some of the plays of the Ramchal is a play where he has the characters are things like hope and humility. Like those are the characters in the play and they all interact. It's kind of like the forerunner of the Pixar movie. Something in. It's fine. You'll remember. Anyone? Let's see. And remember what it's called?
Inside Out.
Inside Out. There you go. Perfect. Great. So the original version of the Mesilat Yesharim was written in that format, and then it was, I think the Ramchal himself thought that maybe just having a conversation would be easier for people to access. But it's really interesting. The original text of Mesilat Yesharim has been translated, I believe, by Feldheim, if I remember correctly. You can find the manuscript version that's since been published if you're interested in taking a look at that. So back to the introduction. Amar ha-mechaber. Ha-chibur hazeh lo chibartiv lamed livnei adam et asher lo yadu. This text of the Mesilat Yesharim is not here to teach any grand chidushim. It's not here to teach any novelli. It's not here to give big chidushim. Even though we'll see that in the midst of all this, there will be. But most of what he says, to some extent, or to a large extent, we will could argue are things that people know. Now, when we get later in the book, I think that there's a lot of stuff that I don't know. Most of us know, but at least in the beginning of the book, I think this holds very true. So, if these are things that we know already, what's the point of learning it? So, ela lahaskir mesa yadu lahem kvar muforsam etzlam pirsum gadol. So, what's the goal? The goal here is to remind people. Because life is busy. And as we get older, we get more cynical. And we forget and sometimes purposefully push back some of these more idealistic ideas because, you know, do I really need to do that? Life is so busy. Life is so hard. Is it really worth putting all the effort and time into becoming a more patient person? What is it really going to get me? Is it going to get me my bottom line better? Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but is it worth all of that commitment or anything else? Kilosim saberov dvarai ela dvarim shirov bani adam yodim osam velo mistap kim bahem klal. The things that we're going to be studying are not things that people really have any doubts about. They know what they're doing. Ela shikafi rov pirsum ukenegin mashi amitatel gluya lakol kach hahelem mehem matsui ma'od veshech harava. Even though these things are known to people, the problem is that we forget, and most of us forget, and most of us are distracted. Life, like I said, is so busy, it's so easy to not be able to control ourselves in this way. Al kain ein hatoelas haniklat mizeh hasefer yotzei min hakriya bo pamachas. Therefore, he says, and this is a great way to require people to read over your book a number of times. He says, the goal of this book is not for you to read it once and to have the knowledge now and to move on. Rather, you need to do chazara. You need to review. This has to be, right, the growth mentality, which is really, for me, the most important takeaway from the entire book of Mesilat Yesharim, is the constant thought of, how can I be better today? Right? That idea of always thinking, what can I do a little bit better today, is the notion that he's trying to convey. I'm not going to teach you anything you don't know, but how as a group, right, can we take the words of the Mesilat Yesharim, the words of Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, and make ourselves a little bit better today? Right? Ki kvar afshar shelo nimsa hakore v'sichlo chidushim acher kriyato, shelo hayu lo lifnei kriyaso elamat. Right? There might be very few novelties that someone who reads this will find. Aval hatoelas yotzei min hachazara alav v'hatmada. What you're going to gain from this text is when you review it and you dwell over some aspects of it. because then it will be easier for you to reference and to remember these things when your life gets busy, when you have all these things on your head, when all of a sudden, right, being able to take the breath and to have the patience is more difficult. If you've taken the time to get yourself into that mindset, I need to be patient, I need to be patient, I've thought about how to become more patient, or again, whatever midah you're particularly working on, then when stuff goes down, when everything seems to be falling apart, which are normally the times where we lose it, where we don't have control, if you've worked on it, kind of like muscle memory, then your brain will automatically revert to those things that you've worked on. And the obligation, which is a very strong word here, right? There's no mitzvah in the Torah, to the best of my knowledge. In fact, the Ramban is considered a big chadshan. He actually has a big novelty in that he has a number of different mitzvot that he counts in the 613 mitzvot, which are these umbrella mitzvot that are things like kiddushim to you. You should be holy. And he says that means that you shouldn't, right, overindulge in things that are mutar. Or v'asisa yashar v'atov, that you should do that which is proper and good. So he talks about ethics and business and how there's an overarching command. So the Ramban develops this idea in some of his works. But when you look at most of the Sifrei HaMitzvos, most of the books that count the various mitzvot, you are not going to find a mitzvah of, right, not getting angry. You're not. So to call it an obligation is really interesting, right? Where does that obligation emanate from? There's no mitzvah to become better. At the same time, there seems to be this almost, right? So one, there's always two options whenever you have a question like that, right? One option is you need to find a makor. You need to find, right, some sort of source in the Torah. Sometimes, though, the Gemara will respond in a different way. The Gemara will say, pshita, right? You don't need a source because it's so obvious. Right, you don't need to give me a reason for why you need to become a better person. That's the most obvious thing in the entire world. Isn't that the whole purpose of life, to become better people? Right, and so that's kind of where this conversation goes. The Ramchal seems to be taking that latter position. Pshita, it's obvious there is a chova, there is an obligation for us to be reviewing these things, to making it a part of ourselves, to perfecting the way that we think about the world, so that when we have challenging situations, we can approach it with the absolute best type of approach in terms of our personality, in terms of our patience, in terms of not getting angry, in terms of not judging things before you actually experience them. Every single type of proper approach can be trained, needs to be trained, and in the words of the Ramchal, is an obligation for us to train ourselves. So we're going to stop here. If anyone has any questions before we get to the just hangout time. But this is basically how this format is going to work. So we'll read through the text of the Mesilat Yesharim. We'll make some points. There will be times where I'll raise some questions, particularly when we get to areas of lived experience. One of the things I really want to try to flesh out with you guys is how does this work in actual life? And that part will be more conversational. Because honestly, I am as much a learner here as I am a teacher. And whenever you have a text like this, it's really important for everybody to be engaging as on equal footing. So even though I'm muting you all today, hopefully over the course of our time learning this together, right, we'll have more of a conversation style around lived experience and how we translate some of the ideas of the Ramchal into the world at large.
Is he done?
Thank you. I'm done. Thank you for tuning in. Anybody have any thoughts, questions?
Rav, I'm very sorry that I could not figure out how to get on this morning. What text do you want us to be following for this class?
Sure. So two things. One, this is being recorded. So if you want, I can send you the recording. We're probably going to have to start posting these recordings somewhere on the website for people to be able to access. But if you have a text of Mesilat Yesharim in your home, right, and you want to note it up and have notes on the side, feel free to use that text. I'll try to help you find exactly where we're up to. The text that I'm going to be using, just because of the ease with which people can find it, is the Sepharia text online. So the website Sepharia has a Hebrew English Misilat Yesharim, and it's very easy to skip chapters and to move about. So it's an easy text for us to use as our baseline. You can really use any text though.
Again slowly though. What is
sure.
it, Sepharia?
Yeah, Sepharia. So I can tell you. Sepharia is spelled Sepharia.org. Okay. And then if you type in Misilat Yesharim in English, Messilat Yesharim, Yesharim, then you should be able to easily find the text itself. They'll have little numbers. There'll be a little tab for the introduction, little tabs for each numbers of the chapters. And one of the things that's good about the Misilat Yesharim is the chapters are not so long. So we could probably cover a chapter every two or so classes. So maybe every week or so we'll cover a chapter. So it's not going to be so hard to help someone find it if they're using a separate text.
So we should purchase that book.
You don't have to. Like I said, if you want to use the Sepharia website, the book is there. And the complete book is there. If you're a person who likes underlining certain lines and writing notes in the tabs, then I would advise purchasing some book. Feldheim has a green covered version of Path of the Just, which is Misilat Yesharim translated. There's a lot of other translations too. That's the one I remember being popular back in my day in yeshiva. I'm sure there's many more even now than there were then.